Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of the No Chill Podcast is presented by Keeps. Hair today, hair tomorrow. On this episode, opponents in college, draft mates in 2001, teammates in Golden State, and back at it in the Big Three, Gilbert and Jason Richardson meet up in Miami. Everyone knows Jay Rich as the two-time dunk champ, but for Gil, he saw the transformation in his game in those early Warrior days. Beyond the ridiculous highlights, Jason became an extremely versatile scorer and skilled shooter. Then there are the dunks. We get into how having Jason's freak athleticism is the ultimate cheat code and get a look back from Gil, who witnessed some of Jay Rich's best posters up close and personal. For the two-time dunk contest winner, we talk about what goes into the All-Star Weekend event and how to make it better. It's the No Chill Podcast. Remember, you can get every episode early on the Himalaya app. You can get every episode wherever you get your podcasts, including the No Chill channel on YouTube. And thanks again to our friends at Keeps for supporting the show.
Gil, look at this view. Where are we right now?
Miami.
Miami, baby. Miami. Right on the water.
There's some holes here.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I haven't been out of the hotel yet, so.
No, you haven't. But, and also, we have Jason here.
Yes, sir.
Just got in. At 4:30 in the morning.
Saginaw, man. That's what happened. You're from the middle of nowhere. You got to leave super early to get to a big city.
I don't think you get the helicopter to Detroit.
Hey, I wish I could, man. I don't even think they got any helicopters in Michigan, though.
Maybe not. So, we had a conversation before you came in. Gil was talking like Gil talks. So, we're going to go back to the first time that you guys were on the court together, probably the first time I'm going to say you met, too, right? It was in Arizona?
Court together? Oh, yeah, no, yeah, Arizona.
So Arizona.
What did you say?
Huh?
What did you say about that time?
Oh, we beat the shit out of them.
They did. Yeah. They whooped
us. What was so funny is we beat the shit out of them. We beat the shit out of them both years.
They did.
The year they won it, and then we beat them in the Final Four, yeah.
They did whooped us. My dad had a dunk on him, though. That was probably one of my top five dunks ever, though. Oh. He was in the picture. He was in the frame.
Yeah, what's so funny is this: the dunk happened so fast and hard. It was hard to figure out what it was like because college you didn't really have replays. So if it happened today, you'd be like, "Yo!" So it was a fast break. Who was it? Charlie Bell went up for layup. Richard Jefferson smacked the shit out this ball. Yeah. Just like, it was like one of those
volleyball.
Boom. Hit the backboard. Boom. And off the
The
ricochet, all you seen was the rim bend down. And that's like, what the? somehow he caught the baseball, hit off the backboard, and dunked it back. It was not like, you know, the like soft little, this was like a pat and just boom, like, what the fuck was that?
I mean, you can't be mad. You can't be embarrassed.
No.
You have to be impressed.
It was embarrassing it with it, like, that's impressive. Because there's no way, like, the ball should have hit half court at least. So easily. The fact that someone actually caught it and then caught it and dunked it back was like, what kind of athleticism is this? Like, you know, because you don't really see, you got to remember, this is the beginning of the season, so you don't really see what someone's capable of. You know, only you know, in college, you don't watch other college basketball. You watch NBA. So, you know, when you just seen it block and you trying to like, and then you just like, oh, what was, like, wait, how did someone just catch that lob? And then you, after the game, you watch, you're like,
oh, jeez. I gotta say, you're born with that athleticism.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's the thing, Gil, you know, he's a skilled player, like, ultimately skilled, right? But you know, like, man, it's a pretty girl that's born that she can eat anything, but she has, like, just the perfect body, right?
Uh-huh.
It's just like, man, if I wish I could just have those hops.
What? Well, because like you gotta remember, we had the same agent, so day in and day out, you're seeing it. We're just seeing like so stuff that looks so easy, And he made it look so easy. It was so difficult. Like, they'd be like, all right, this is what we're going to do. Boom, drop step. All right, go up there, dunk it every time. And then he's doing the power dunk, you know, 10. And I'm like, oh, I can't do that. I can't even do the one dunk. But like, I can tap the backboard with the same, you know, same power. But it was just like me and Kenny Satterfield, like, oh, this is some bullshit.
But I mean, it's the same thing with my athleticism. It was Gilbert Speed. I don't think you remember this. We used to go to the track in the morning before we go work out. And we would run and do these different jumps and stuff like that. And I'm a 2-foot jumper, so I couldn't do any of the stuff. And I remember one time we raced. Yeah. I don't think you remember this. But I think he started off at the 200, and we was at the 100, all of us. And he was the only one at the 200. I was like, oh, there's no way. I'm going to put some money on this. I'm going to win it. I'm taking off. Man, before I even got 50 meters down, he already beat us. So, I mean, his speed was just, it was world-class speed. It was almost the same thing. As he was in awe of my jumping, I was in awe with his speed, just how quick and how fast he was.
Yeah, some guys have lateral, like you have a vertical, some guys have lateral quickness, some guys have end-to-end speed. So it's all like a gift, right? It's what you do with it. And Gil said this about you, you became a complete player.
Yeah.
Not just an athlete.
And I think that's what benefited us. You know, we had a group. It was, you know, with Dan Fagan, it was me, Jay Rich, Kenny Satterfield, Troy Murphy, and then we had Tavares Bell. You got like, he's over here like, geez, and he jumped, that man jumped. But you got five totally different type of players. Four guards that get to learn from each other. Mm-hmm. Like, I have speed, Kenny Satterfield had one-on-one game. Yep. You know what I mean? You know, so, and then Tavares Bell was a one-foot jumper. You know, so you have, so you're sitting there like, damn, I need that. Ooh. Like, so everyone, like, when we're playing one-on-one, we're trying to figure out who we have an advantage over because no one fully has an advantage over each one. So I'd rather go against him versus Kenny Satterfield. Or you know, then I don't want to go against Tavares Bell, or I want to go against Tavares, I don't want to go against Jay Rich. So you're sitting here trying to dictate on how you can try to win this spot because we were all different.
Different, yeah.
We all had different talent in half-court settings. It doesn't work for us. Mm-hmm. You know, so learning each other, going, you know, us three getting drafted together, I think saved everyone's career, especially mine. Because now I get to sit there and depict everything, watching his game, and like, all right, he made that look too easy. Like, what's so funny is, I never told you this. But this is why, like, I had a rough start. You remember we're playing Toronto first game? And you got Vince.
Yeah.
Right? And when Vince did that dunk, boom. They're like, he did it like a spin, boom. And I got him. Oh, like I'm a fan. You know, you're a fan, like, oh shit. You know, sitting there, right? And then you come down and score. But what scared me was like, damn, if Jay Rich is a Bugatti, and then Vince Carter is a Bugatti over that Bugatti. I'm a fucking Honda. I'm a Honda. I can't. Like, and it's just like I don't even belong here. Like, it was just one of those, like, the athleticism of just that position was like, that's every night.
Yeah.
And then when, like, Michael Finley, Kobe, and it was just like, I'm outmatched. That's when I was like, shooting guard? No. So I got, and that's when I mentally had to switch to the point because the shooting guard position scared me so much just because of the first game. It was just one of those things. It was like, yo, them super athletes, that's fucking insane. Like, you got to think about it. If I'm training with him, I know he's Bugatti status. So when you see Bugatti status gets Bugattied, you like,
where do I fit?
Like, where do I go? At this point, I'm number 15. Yeah, this is where I belong. Buddy, let me go ahead and sit my ass right here.
But I think the thing about that group that we all worked out together, we were just special because we all pushed each other. Like, we were all super competitive. Like, when we go on those one-on-ones, it was war. It's like, you didn't want to lose. You know, we all became so close about it, and it didn't matter. I mean, we were young. We would go to the club until 2-3 in the morning, but we all up at 5 on the track getting ready to go. Nobody, you know, slacking off. everybody ready to go to work. And I think that's what made that group so special, how we just pushed each other all the time. It was always who's working harder, who's getting better. And I think that's what made us realize and became better pros after we, you know, got drafted and stuff.
Yeah, I think we talked about, I think it was Antoine who was saying it was perfect timing of all these young guys, and the team was kind of wide open. There was Mookie Blaylock was the vet, but those vets were, but it was like anybody could get their spot on the roster.
You know, it was one of those things where I think it benefited me, him, and Troy, because we already, from the whole summer with each other, we already established our talents. Mm-hmm. So we all respected each other already. No matter where we got drafted, it didn't matter. So it was like, okay, we know what we bring to the game. We just got to figure out how to pull it all together for each other. So I remember Troy Murphy, he has Danny Fortson.
Oh, geez.
He has Danny Fortson, and he has Mark Jackson. So they ping-ponging this motherfucker, our rookie season.
When you talk about bullying, stay bullying.
Bullying. Like he was like a rag doll.
Elbow to the neck then, every time. Bam.
It was just one of those things, like if he was just sitting under the rim, like in no man's land, someone came just, like it was like that one white boy in the all black school, and they didn't like him. And like it's like we felt bad. Like, damn. I thought I was supposed to be getting that treatment. So he never said anything. He just played and fought.
Yep.
But the whole summer, he called himself the horsey, because what he did was he didn't want to feel that going into season two. So he stayed in the weight room
the whole summer.
Yep. Just because of those two in practice.
Not anybody in the NBA. Those two dudes on his team. His own teammates.
Not some all NBA players. You talking about Danny Forson, Mark Jackson. And he spent his whole summer for those two guys to battle in practice.
Yeah, it's basically like they were the two bullies on the playground.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they teamed up.
Yep.
You know, they teamed up. So he spent, and just to see, that's what I said, is I'll come in and he's on a machine. Sure. What's so funny is I never knew after 999 shots it went back to zero. I just never knew because motherfuckers never shot that much. Until he was on the machine and he's just sitting there shooting, and then it just zero. It's like 999, zero. Like, oh, shit. Like, I just assumed it had phone numbers. I never, you know, but that's what we did. We were actually trying to get better when our environment didn't say we should.
Yep.
You know? You guys were, I think, of that same mold that you knew if I'm going to play in the league, I got to get better at all times. I'm not just here and I'll
yeah,
coast.
I think we both had chips on our shoulders. I mean, I think for him, the biggest thing was everybody overlooked him. Mm-hmm. They kept on saying, it's not a point guard, too small to be a shooting guard. That drove him crazy. Me coming in the league, I was a high pick.
You also got in the way of that because you were dunking.
Yeah, I was dunking all over the people. But at the same time, I knew if I wanted to survive in the NBA, I had to learn how to develop a jump shot. I didn't play guard literally my whole life until I got to Michigan State. So you got to think, I played basketball since I was, three or four? And so for three or four until you 18, till you get to college, that you actually play guard, you have to learn how to dribble and shoot, it was hard for me. I mean, to this day, I still have problems dribbling. But my shot, my shot is good because I just continue to work on it. But, you know, your ball handling is something naturally. Sometimes people just have it, people just don't have it, and I just didn't have it. So it just drove us to continue to work. And then, like, us being so competitive, we used to see who could get to the gym first.
Yeah.
Trying to stay on the machine longer. He's sitting there waiting. I get to the gym first. He's going to be waiting an hour and a half, mad at me, trying to kick me out. The same way he get there before me, I'm mad. Like, come on, man. You done, man? No. 800 shots, Gil. Come on, man. And we got a game the next day. We doing that night before the game just to get better. And that's what just drove us to get better like that.
So you were the only two on the team that were doing that, basically?
Troy
was in the weight room.
No, that's what we each had our own battles, you know, that's what is funny, because he's number five pick. So you thinking number five pick? Yeah, you know, I got life chilling. What's happening? He's like, no, I got something to prove, because they still saying I can't shoot. all right, I'm going to show them. So, you know, you, mm-hmm. and me, I'm like, come on, man, you playing. I ain't even playing. Let me get on the machine. You know, so that's what I said. So the competitiveness is just like, yo, let me get the machine. You play tomorrow.
I need this more than you. I need this right now.
Shit, I'm trying to get this perfect for practice.
But that where you're drafted doesn't matter. You still got to work your ass off.
You still got to work your ass off.
Look at Zion, number one pick.
Yeah. But that's the problem.
You should be doing that.
Yeah. You don't know it until you, like so I said, we get there and we're the ones pushing each other. We wasn't pushed by veterans. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I said, we're in a hectic situation trying to figure out how to get better. And because of the situations we're going through, we're making each other better. We're racing each other to the gym, not some veteran, mm-hmm. you know, telling us, oh, let's get to the, no, we're trying to see who can get there because we know if one of us is late, you're going to have to wait at the practice. Yep. You know what I mean? You're going to have to wait at the practice because the morning is shut down, God damn it. And that's what drove us.
Yeah.
That's what drove us. Like, and I remember when I had made a stand against the organization.
Where, I can't picture you doing that ever.
Like, it was our sophomore year, our first national television game playing against Jason Kidd. And game starts, I got 7 of our points, right? It's like 7-12. Sub, 3 minutes into the game. Set the whole half. Then coach is gonna tell me at halftime, finish where you left off. That's where I fucking left off. What kind of shit is this? Like, I ain't even doing nothing. I'm about to be baking this motherfucker. You bench me? Like, what part of the game is this? So I decided I'm boycotting. Jay Rich said, fuck it, I'm with you. Boy, like, he started. He started us as a sense of funny, bro. He started. He playing. He's like, you boycott. I'm boycotting with you. We both missed practice. Right? We both missed practice for a boycott that had nothing to do with him.
Hey, that's a good team.
I know, that's what that's I said. Right? Nothing to do with him. Like, he could have easily said, your boycott ain't got nothing. I was even expecting him to boycott. Had nothing to do with it. This is just you fucking with me. Like, so I'm mad. Fuck you. So we missed those. We missed practice. So they bench us, right? We bench us against Utah.
This is Dave Cowens, right?
Nah, this is Musselman. Musselman. This is our second year.
Musselman.
And then when they put us in,
went to work.
We went to work. We said, but it was. This is the first time I experienced the game was more than basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Big time. Because it was one of those things where I had to sit down with Musselman and figure out if you care what they think and you don't win, because, you know, at that time I'm outplaying what they can pay me.
Yeah.
You know, because then there was a cap that, you know, for a second rounder. So you can only pay me so much and I'm playing out of that. So you're not gonna be able to afford me next year. But what does that have to do with you? Because if you're not winning, they gonna fire you real quick. So you gotta make a choice. Because I can tell you right now, I'm gonna figure out how you playing me and I'm just gonna play. So, you know, right now I'm averaging 18-7-7. I'm gonna keep averaging 18. That number's locked the fuck in. That 7-7 is gonna go down. God damn it, I can tell you that for sure.
But what's that about though? A coach wants control.
No, it didn't have nothing to do with
it. It was the front office.
Yeah. But they're saying the front office is giving him pressure. You gotta control your team control.
Yeah, you gotta control. Yeah. So it's like, you know, you gotta remember that pressure goes to you because if you ain't winning, they have to get rid of you. So what's happening? And then that's when he brings in another boy kids and then fucks him over in the fourth quarter. You know, then it's like, what is basketball really about sometimes? Is it actually about winning or is it about contracts? And I paid this man $12 million.
Sorry,
I got
to play him. Yep.
What?
Yeah, I think that was a time we realized that. I mean, you know, because when we first came into the league, we were we were supposed to take the franchise from the dark area to what it, you know, supposed to be what it is right now. And, you know, it came in, I kind of started probably the third or fourth game of the season, probably started the rest of the season that Troy kind of came later on in 20, and Gilbert still wasn't getting time. And I'm like, wait a minute. I'm calling the agent, I'm looking at him like, man, how the hell are you not on the floor, man? And it was literally probably around like after All-Star season. I was in the GM office every day. He needs to start. They was mad at me every day before I got to the floor. He needs to start. Why the fuck he's not starting? And then that's when I knew it was more than just, oh, this guy should play because he's better. No, it was like, oh, we getting this guy so much money, or we trying to trade this guy, or we trying to do this. And they totally controlled it. I mean, it's totally different now, but that's how it went back then. Like, we got to play this player. So we got to play him.
And it's like the things that, like, you know, you're grateful when it works in your favor. And for the most part, it worked in our favor, mm-hmm. You know. But you got to know, other than that, there's players out there, you like, come on, why? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I've played against, like, somebody that'll come in for 3 minutes, bust ass.
Put one right
out.
And
you'd be like, woo, yeah. I'm glad that motherfucker was on the wrong side of his coach. Because he was nice. Mm-hmm. And he's like, and his whole career gets shut down because he only makes a couple hundred thousand. That guy makes 20. Mm-hmm. So they got to play. They got to get, you know, because it's one of those things. Well, if I start playing this, he's going to be worth 20. Now I got a 20 and a 20. You know, and that's really how they think. You know, so it's like, well, I'm going to bench him. Hopefully I can keep him under a certain number until I figure out what I'm going to. Like, we basketball players. We don't give a fuck about none of that. Mm-hmm. He's sorry. Let me go help the team so I can. And that's all we care about. And it hurts us sometimes to see the way shit shakes out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say that gets in the way of how you play and really how the team's future goes if they're overthinking it.
You have a lot of teams that do that.
Yeah.
They overthink it way too much.
They overthink it because the people who make decisions really don't have no experience on decision making or on coaching styles or they don't know what to expect. Like if you have a bunch of rookies and young talent and you have this coach that's supposed to lead them, I hope your expectations ain't to win. I hope it's just to get them better. So his job shouldn't be on the line first 5 years because he has to get them ready to develop.
You said Stan Van Gundy, builder coach.
Uh-huh.
And you think of a guy like Phil Jackson. Phil doesn't want to work with young players
because he knows winning
is more important than anything.
Winning is more important because if you're winning, they can't fire you. So I want a veteran team. I want a team that already knows how to play so I can secure my job.
Mm-hmm.
I want the best of the best. I don't want a bunch of young players that I got to build. I want them to already be ready to play.
Yep.
You know, so you have two, three different types of coaching styles or jobs in the NBA, but they're all treating them all the same. If you're not winning right now, what do I need you for?
Yep.
Like, I'm not winning because I got a bunch of Hondas and cars I got to fix up to get raceable. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about I got 2 years. 2 years, your number two pick is going to be 20.
Yep.
What the fuck he's supposed to do? You know, and that's the problem. And players get frustrated, players get down, players, you know, become angry. Because you got to remember, if you have a young team and you got that veteran on it, and that veteran only knows how to win, how to get better, you have two types of veterans. A good veteran that's like, you know what, I'm not going to say too much, I'm going to keep positive with the kids. Or you got the angry one like, come on, man, these kids are weak, man, they're not practicing. I'm in the gym day in and day out and they not doing nothing. Yeah. It's like, man, we don't even like him, man. Then he becomes a bad locker room guy.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a bad locker room guy because I want to win? Mm. Okay. Aight. You know, and that's when you hear, oh, he's a bad locker room guy.
Yep.
You know, because they never put it in, like, why is he a bad locker room guy? Because he's always yelling at the team to get better and win. Yeah, that looks stupid. Yeah, you can't say that. You know, that's like Jimmy Butler. Like, we see how fierce
Come on, man.
He wants to win. So you got to expect, like, if that's how he is in a game, he's going to be like that in practice. He's going to be trying to turn that shit on.
But there's some guys that are always on 10, and you're just kind of like, man, you're so intense, but sometimes to pull it back a little
man,
bit.
Man, listen, I would love to have a player like Jimmy Butler on my team. The way he, I know he's gonna have my back, and he's gonna do whatever it takes to win. And that's what it's all about. And I think that's what the difference is, kind of going forward right now. It's not about winning. It's like, well, I'll get my money, I'll get my numbers, I'm good.
It's about we all want to get along.
Yeah.
And get
yeah, for the most part. Yeah. I mean, that's what I said. It's just a different league. Players are understanding their value a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you see some of the moves that's made, like back then, if a player left, you know, because social media is here now, but like, you know, like somebody like Steven Jackson said, man, this era is soft. They all practicing together. They all doing this. I would never practice. Well, you from Atlanta. Ballers didn't come to Atlanta. See, we've always played in against each other. If LA, you came to yeah. LA,
you played
all
everybody.
The NBA players, all, yep. They all played and interacted constantly with each other from the beginning. Yep. Yep. But you had to be in that city. If you came from Michigan, and there's no group of NBA players that you get to compete against. So Chicago, LA, those guys came back in the summer and battled.
Mm-hmm.
Also recruited. So when free agency's up, we hit it, yo, hey, we want you to come through. Now it's their decision to say yay or nay.
Mm-hmm.
So recruiting was always part of the game. That's just how it's always been.
Yep.
If you hear some of the trades that players tried to do, you'd be like, damn, if that would have happened, boy, we would have, you know. Yep. But if that man upstairs ain't pulling that trigger, what's the
point of it?
Guys, hold that thought. We got to take a break to talk about our friends at Postmates. We've been on the road all summer, and wherever we go, whatever time it is, we got to eat. How do we make it happen? It's got to be with Postmates. When you need red wine at 4 p.m., sushi at 9 p.m., a breakfast burrito, ooh, that's so good, right, Gil? At 8 a.m., and ibuprofen at 10 a.m., you never know. You just Postmate it. Postmates is your professional food delivery, grocery delivery, whatever kind of delivery service, all year round. Anything you're craving, Postmates can deliver. They're the largest on-demand network in the U.S. and offer delivery from all the restaurants, grocery, and convenience stores and traditional retailers you could possibly want or need. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, Postmates will bring you what you need within the hour. No more trips to the store. Don't even have to know where the store is. Postmates will deliver anything to you. Download the app for iOS or Android for free. Browse local restaurants and businesses and track your delivery in real time. And for fans of the No Chill podcast, for a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. Start your free deliveries, download the app, and use the code NOCHILL. That's right, that code NOCHILL for $100 of free delivery credit for the first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. Download Postmates and save with the code NOCHILL. Oh, we love to talk about our friends at Manscaped. They support the No Chill podcast. Manscaped is the number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. So on the No Chill podcast, we've talked about hoop nuts. Think about it. You're in the gym. You're sweating. Take off the shorts and it does not smell good. Well, Manscaped has something just for that. They call it the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why are you not putting deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? And it's the cure for hoop nuts. Manscaped has also redesigned the electric trimmer. Their Lawnmower 2.0 has proprietary skin-safe technology, so this trimmer won't nick or snag your nuts. Manscaping accidents are finally a thing of the past. And you don't have to use the same trimmer on your face you're using on your balls. That's just nasty. So let's get going. Let's get clean. Let's step up your game. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code NOCHILL at manscaped.com. Always use the right tools for the job. Your balls will thank you. So one more time, get 20% off free shipping and a free travel bag with the code NOCHILL at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping and a free travel bag at manscaped.com and use the code NOCHILL. Speaking of stepping up your game, we gotta talk about our friends at Indochino. We took the time to go through the process of getting measured for our suits and shirts with Indochino, and it's so smooth, so easy, it's gonna change the game in how you shop. Indochino is the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company. Guys love the wide selection of high-quality fabrics and colors to choose from, not to mention the option to personalize the details, including your lapel, lining, pockets, buttons, and writing your own monogram. Here's how it works. Visit a stylist at their showroom, with over 40 showrooms in North America, they make it pretty easy for you, and have them take the measures on you personally, or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. You choose your fabric inside and out, choose your design and customizations, submit your measurements with your choices, and then just relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you within a couple of weeks. So for listeners and fans of the No Chill Podcast, we got something for you. You get any premium Indochino suit for just $369. $369 for a premium suit. All you gotta do, go to Indochino.com, then enter No Chill at checkout. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com with the promo code NOCHILL for any premium suit for just $369 and free shipping. That's an incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Once you go custom, you don't go back. Go to Indochino.com and don't forget NOCHILL at checkout. All right, let's take a break to talk about our friends at Keeps. They've made the Summer Big 3 Tour possible. We want to give them a special shout out. So guys, 2 out of 3 of you will experience some form of nail pattern baldness by the time you're 35. Good news, with today's advancements in science, Keeps offers proven treatments that can combat the symptoms of hair loss. Keeps has revolutionized the way men are treated for hair loss. You used to have to go to the doctor's office for your hair loss prescription. Now, thanks to Keeps, you can visit a doctor online and get medication delivered to your home. No more waiting rooms, no more pharmacy checkout lines. Grit, doctor attention, discreet drug delivery, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. Guys, prevention is key. Keeps treatments really work. They're up to 90% effective at reducing and stopping further hair loss. The sooner you start using Keeps, the more hair you'll save. So act fast. Many men even experience hair regrowth with Keeps treatments. Find out why Keeps has more 5-star reviews than any of its competitors, and nearly 100,000 men trust Keeps for their hair loss prevention medication. Keeps treatments start at just $10 a month. Plus, for a limited time, you can get your first month free. That's right, fellas. They make it easy for you and take care of you at the same time. Because on the No Chill Podcast, we take care of our fans. So if you're ready to take action and prevent hair loss, go to keeps.com/nochill to receive your first month of treatment for free. That's KEEPS.com/nochill. Hair today, hair tomorrow. Thank you, Keeps. Back to the show.
Like, I remember, you remember it was the banana boat with Dwayne Wade?
Yeah.
Dwayne Wade is a free agent that year.
Mm-hmm.
They're in Italy 12 days. Best friends, 12 days.
Mm-hmm.
Miami already said they're not bringing them back. So, okay. Dwayne's going to Cleveland. Oh, he's too much. We're gonna go with Dunleavy.
Yep.
And you're sitting there like what? It's.
You know what I think that is? A small market.
What?
That's the mindset of ownership in a small market.
But that's what I said.
They're not gonna overspend.
Yeah.
But to win, you have to.
I know.
It's hard to win with mediocre team. Yeah, they were fortunate to do it because they got LeBron James, so having a bunch of mediocre players helped. I mean, mm-hmm. It worked for them, but you took only that one player off the team, and it was damn near last place.
But I think that changed when he came here to Miami, and then he came back to Cleveland. That's when they started to spend more.
They didn't know. Do you know who Cleveland's biggest free agent they ever paid was?
I was going to say Kevin Love.
Free agent,
he traded for him.
No, he already played for them. Outside free agent. I'll save you time. Larry Hughes.
Yeah, I was about to say Larry. Yeah.
2006.
Yep.
That was the last, that was the biggest contract Cleveland Cavaliers ever paid anyone from the outside.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Let you know.
Yeah.
Wow.
let you know.
Speaking of fixing, I brought this up to him earlier today. The dunk contest. You know it well.
Yeah.
It's fallen on hard times a little bit. It's not what it used to be. I don't think it's as cool as it used to be, and there's got to be better ways to do it. So Gil has talked about this before. He has an idea. But how would you make the dunk contest better?
You know, it's just so hard now because everybody damn near did every dunk possible, like human possibly, without jumping off a trampoline, basically. And I think my thing is I'm old school, you know, growing up watching Mike, watching Dominique Wilkins, those guys. You got one chance to do a dunk. And that was the best part of it because you caught people by element of surprise. You didn't go up there and try, wait a minute, all right, 20 times. And then the dunk never happened. And by the time they make the dunk, you're like, that shit was all right. And shit, all right. I mean, it took you 25 times to do it. So I think they just should go back to old school format. You get one dunk, all this time dunk, all that stuff like that, and the antics. And I think that's good for the fans, but I'm just an old school guy. Let's go out there and just show what you could do.
Pure dunker.
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny because if you think about the antic dunks, the dunk itself is a one.
Yeah.
The antic is the what? Woo! Like, you know.
Like the kid Collins from Atlanta that jumped off the airplane.
He gonna look back that in 10 years and be like, damn, that was some dumb shit.
Yeah.
That's what I said. It's like,
not as great as he could have been for all that building.
You know, I think Amari did one of them. I bounce it off my head and catch it.
Yeah.
No, I was with Steve Nash.
Steve Nash.
Yeah.
So you did a two-hand dunk.
Right, then I'm telling that shit too.
But I saw that one. So, you did a two-hand dunk. That's it. Look at that. Like, you can't count the pass as part of the actual dunk.
Oh man, we're talking.
You know, but that's what ends up happening. The dunks became simple, and the antics like, all right, we're gonna. And then the guy's like, 10! No, he's not part of the dunk, bro. You can't say 9 and 1. No, you got to only judge the actual dunk. The dunk was the one. You know?
Oh, man.
I wanted outside dunking. I think if outside dunking came in, it would kind of force NBA dunkers to open, because you got to remember, an NBA dunker doesn't sit here and train for one moment.
No.
It's a one moment, like one weekend, one day of a weekend that I got to perform. Other than that, on a fast break, I'm going to do this. You got to remember, I'm not going to be training all summer just for this one night.
You know, I think that's what fans think that you're in the gym actually practicing for a dunk.
He didn't practice one dunk before the dunk contest.
But when you're at an age, right, when probably when you first could dunk, and then you would do more, like you're just like, oh, this is cool. I want to try to windmill it now and try to throw off the backboard.
Yeah, that's just everybody. Once you start dunking, you want to try different things. Yep. You're doing that in like 8th, 9th grade.
Great. That's what I'm saying. You got this whole dunk.
You're doing that stuff in the games. You're not sitting there.
Actually, most people don't do it in 8th, 9th grade.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think the night before we went to All-Star Weekend both years that I won it, I was in the gym. I think he was up in there, and he was like, we was shooting or doing something. He just told me different dunks. He come up with these dunks in his head. And I go up there and try it, and not full speed. I'm like, okay, I got that. I'm going to do it in the game.
And that was it. And then somebody's like, yo, did you see him do the dunk? I was like, he didn't do the dunk until he actually did it in the game. Like, so we sit there really trying to like, all right. Because as I said, it's – it's like, all right, what dunks you gonna do for the? It's like, I don't know, I ain't think about it yet. This is the night before. Like, I don't know, I ain't think about it yet.
Like, but yeah, because I think we've seen in dunk contests, guys were like, he would be really good. Sean Kemp, you would think would have won it, and he probably just never really prepared.
But that's what I said, because the dunks that you see in game is their creativity on the move. Mm-hmm. Now when you say, all right, dunk contest dunks, it's like, I mean, I can try it. But
you've actually seen guys, they're like, I think I'm going to like rock it this way. Or
yeah, but you got to remember, think about somebody.
I didn't even think of it till now.
But think about these kids who are dunk champs, and they're doing these. They've practiced this one dunk 3-4 weeks. No dunkers doing that. I mean, I got games to play. Nobody trying to do
that. So that's what you're saying, outside dunkers, guys that aren't in the
which is,
NBA,
I think, is a good idea.
It's a great idea. You have like a pre-dunk contest to get you validated for the actual dunk contest. One guy or two guys. What it do is it kind of tweaks it and changes it just a little bit to force the dunkers to say, all right, let me go ahead and really focus. I'm not gonna let an outside entity come in and dunk. Or you make these dunk kids who commit do like a 3-year commitment. Because what ends up happening is if you look through time, the best dunker after one, two dunk contests, he's like, I'm over that.
I think
yeah. I'm over it.
MJ yeah. do three? Three or four?
I think it was three.
Yeah.
So he has three and Dominique has three?
No, no, he lost in Seattle. Three.
Yeah. He didn't remember win that, three, the, he competed in three.
He had the chains on.
Uh-huh. Yep.
In the old Chicago jersey, that thing, he was doing the cradle. That was his rookie year. He didn't win. And then Dominique, I think, did four.
He did four.
Yeah, that's what I said. So it's like.
But I mean, you had those guys who were superstars, and they did more than one.
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. But now it's like.
How many did you do?
I did three.
Three, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you get to a point where it's like the best dunkers don't always come in. You know, so you have guys in the NBA that are dunk contest dunks, but they might be sitting at the end of the bench.
Mm-hmm.
They might not got freestyle dunking in the game for them to be voted on. So there's some of your talent too that can make the dunk contest better. But because they can't get off the bench to get in the game to show. Did James White ever enter an NBA dunk contest? No, right?
No, I don't think so.
But I was thinking Gerald Green.
He got a dunk contest.
No, he did. Yeah. But I mean, he was at the end, one of those guys at the end of the bench that you knew was a freak vertical.
But I'm saying, like, but somebody like, White, James White.
Mm-hmm.
If he would have ever entered the dunk contest, he was going to come between the legs.
From the free throw line.
Which would have been probably top two dunks of all time.
Mm-hmm.
All the players know what he can do, but the fact that he never got off the San Antonio bench, they can't validate him being in the dunk contest.
I actually think he did. I remember. We'll double check.
Okay.
I have my laptop over here, but
no, trust me,
it's all right. It's all
if
right.
If he got into the dunk contest, that was the dunk he was gonna do, trust me. It would be
It was coming. It was coming.
But the point is, even if you go one time, you might not be ready for how it happened. Like you said, it's if it's timed or you had your dunk, but then you missed it, then guys get like tight or whatever.
But that's now. That's the now dunk. Yeah. Then it was one dunk.
It was one dunk.
Yeah.
And you had one chance to finish it. And that was it. Like if you even try to take it between your legs, you burn your arm halfway, you lost the ball. Oh, that was your attempt. That was your attempt. Then he's like, damn. So it made you like, I got to go finish this dunk. And now it just, I mean, I think the one year, I think it was 2 years after I stopped doing it, I think it was Birdman did it like 50 attempts at one awkward. Dunk.
Yeah,
it was like,
yeah,
man,
yeah,
come
yeah.
on, bro. Just put it in, man. Come on, man.
Mark Barkley and Kenny were clowning him like, you know, can we just stop this right now? You know, and the, like put him out of his misery. Yeah, he doesn't have to actually do it. But I don't know. I mean, it was like the event of All-Star Saturday night, you know, like it was the coolest thing. And I was there in Charlotte this year. It was all right. But,
to them or have a tryout.
Mm-hmm.
Have a dunk tryout. For everyone in the NBA. That's what I'm saying is the best, like LeBron James. He's a great dunker. Not necessarily
a dunk contest dunker.
So
he would have
lost.
Mm. What was he gonna do?
Jump and do the hang or do the cradle?
First second year LeBron on the break would full speed reverse cock it, you know, windmill.
That is in-game.
It was on a breakaway
that's
by himself.
In-game dunk, that's a 10. Dunk contest, that's a 4.
Yeah.
So you know he did the dunk contest as a high schooler and won it.
McDonald's.
Shannon Brown,
high school.
The All-American game.
Yeah, I mean,
people go back and watch that, and that's why I was like,
But as I said, it's like when windmills start coming, between the leg, windmills start coming, all that, cradle, they cradle that with a, they throwing through the legs with a cradle now. I mean, that's what I said. So, you know, him going to the dunk, losing, wasn't good for his brain.
Nope.
So that's what I said. It should be like an open invite. All right. We got these many spots, everyone sign up. And now you get to actually pick real dunkers, even if some of them never play. Because you want Gordon and
Levine.
Okay, you want them. But you also want 3-4 other players that also compete with that dunk, not two other bozos that are 6'10". Are 6'10", like, come on, you know you're not going to win, bro. Like, give a spot to that 6'7", 6'6", guard that can jump out the gym. Like, that's who's supposed to be here.
You know what my solution is? I think the winners of before should go back and coach.
Oh, man.
Coach?
Yeah, be the dunk coach.
That'd be
tough.
That's a dumb ass. You know what? Be honest with you, I think they should do like what baseball is doing. They up the prize money. Mm. I think baseball, the home run derby, they was having a lot of guys not doing it. They put $1 million in it. Now you're thinking like, that's $1 million. Now you get all the young guys automatically.
I think it was like $25,000 in the '80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, you put $1 million.
You put
$1 million up. Vince Carter's coming back.
you get some guys out there. That's what baseball did. Guys didn't want any interest in the home run derby. They put that $1 million out. Everybody came back.
As I said, when you're 18, 19, 20, 21, you want to be in part of dunk contest because you've seen. If you're a dunker, that's what you. But once you win, it's like, all right, I'm good.
Yeah. Your name out there already now.
Yeah, but even though you still can dunk for the next 6 years and win it, you're like, give it to somebody else who's a little bit younger. You're only 21. Like, you know, it's just one of those things where you can't bring a dunk coach because you only going to see the motherfucker on Saturday.
Yep.
You got to remember, there is a season. There's this thing that's called a season. So a dunk champ ain't going to be after practice. Like, all right, so I need you. That coach, man, if you don't get your motherfucking ass, we got a game tonight.
Right.
No, it's just one that night before walkthrough. Here's some ideas.
But well, you can't do that dunk.
You got friends.
I couldn't do that dunk, so you're going to be stuck like that. I mean, so and back to the story of, you know, doing it over and over and over. Like, my third year doing a dunk contest, I'm like, shit, how many windmills and 360s can I do? Like, let me change it up this way. All right, nah, that wasn't that good. And then the last one I had, that was the last dunk I probably could ever do, was throwing off the backboard between the legs. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I had nothing else. Like, the final round, I had no other dunk. Yeah. I was tapped out. I said, okay, let me throw off the backboard, chop up my arm. But Vince did that. So it's like, how they going to accept that? So,
But you see how he's thinking about the dunks at the contest. That's what I'm saying. At the contest is when he's actually thinking about the dunk. Because there's no pre-thought of, all right, I'm about to go do this. It's like,
Yep, just let me try it.
Let me try it. And then don't let you be up, and then somebody in front of you did the dunk. You had number one.
Oh, man.
I'm gonna fuck my shit up.
That's what happened in the second dunk contest. Desmond Mason came in between the legs. Boom! I was like, God damn, that's my last dunk. let me see if they go like this. Don't throw it up, take it between my legs backwards. Gil was telling me about it. I was like, let me see. And so when you see it, when I land, I'm looking at everybody, all my peers, and they run. I was like, okay, I got this. So like,
you were there, right?
Yeah,
I remember. Yeah, well, basically for the rest of us, we just wish we could do it. Just for one day. Do it like that.
Yeah. What's so funny is, I used to look at, like, I used to watch him, like, you know how you just sit there and just be like, I mean, he got a 50, but shit he do in practice was way better than that motherfucker right there. Like, because you got to remember, I practice with him. So it's like, so watching him in dunk contests and he do a dunk, I'm like, nah, he did that. He did that in Pro-Am in San Francisco. Like, he did the 360 between the legs. So that was a five. Like, you know, it was kind of weird for me because I all summer, all season, watching him in practice, you know, like catch the ball under. Like, I seen one where it was like a hawk cut.
Mm-hmm.
And caught the ball like off the hawk cut pass, and before you turn, you was already, it's like you caught it and already double punt and just reached for the, and I'm like, come on, dog, that ain't even fair because it was like hawk cut, you know, like a hawk cut, you try to get in for the layup, and the fact that the rim is like here and he's hawk cutting and then he bounces it and just leans. And I'm like, you don't even supposed to be doing stuff like that.
That's a cheat code.
I know, it was like a cheat code because it was no way he was supposed to dunk nor anybody was expecting. I'm like, dang. Oh, shit.
I think he was your biggest fan.
That's what I said because when you see shit happen in practice, like, that's what I said, dunks in practice, because it's on people in traffic. every day, you just be like, man, he can jump. God damn. Like, there's be dunks like we're in San Francisco, and I remember the San Francisco, yep. What's the name? Yep. It just be, like, you know how you, like, it was on a fast break, and then you caught the ball so late, and then you bounced it, and then went under. Boom! Just all in one fast motion. And I'm just sitting here like... how was you supposed to do that? Because it was like one of those where, because he was under the basket, all right, I'm going to turn around and, you know, catch it here. But to keep running and then just, like, he's running, dunking, so he's still moving to throw it back and just keep going, like.
Yeah, it's like watching Cirque du Soleil. How is that physically?
Yeah, right. But that's what I said. Those are the dunks I was witnessing live. Mm-hmm. So my dunk contest experience was like, I was all right. Oh, you won.
So Gil was spoiled.
I was a spoiled little brat. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, speaking of spoil, we're here in Miami. We got to get out of here. You got the beach. The water's calling us. So.
Yes, sir.
So you can't. We had you before one time. We kind of rolled up on you in the shoot around that day. So this is official. We're glad to officially die.
Glad to be here. That's cool.
You know what? How good? Like, I know how good he was because I had to guard him. Mm-hmm. But how good was Steve Nash's vision?
Oh, man. Like, when I first got to Phoenix, I literally was getting hit in the face. Pow! Like, I'm cutting the basket. Pow! The ball is literally the first practice. And they just told me, just hold your hands up. He's going to find you. And, you know, a lot of people don't like that, all the dribbling around, but he's just searching. He's searching for a pass, and he can just see you. Like, you cutting down the lane, and he'll miss you, and next thing you know, it's like this. It's off his hands. His vision was unreal with how he could just pass the ball, man. It was just unreal.
Like, I was seeing some of his highlights, and I'd just be like, what was your thought process? And, and then, you know, like, little.
Yeah.
Like, I used to sit there and, like, watch people do stuff, and I'm like, I can see the pass, but didn't think to throw it that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was... like, I remember my most iconic pass was to him.
Off the floor.
Off the floor when I bounce it, knowing that if he misses it,
you're out.
My career is over. Because he's the future, and this shit is... You know, but that was the only time I thought about, like, something just, but it was part of the moment. But other than that, like, some of the stuff that catches, I'm just like.
Well, it's great. For Steve, it was his anticipation, too. He would see you were open before you knew you were open.
He knew you were coming. Because, I mean, his thing, like, I mean, I was watching some of the highlights. My son watched them all the time. And he's dribbling towards the lane. He's seeing that I'm cutting already. He already have it in his head. He's just pulling the defender a little bit more. Boom, ball's gone. He's like, damn, how you see that before the play even developed? His head is always on the swivel. He never dribbled his head.
And he would know how to deliver, too.
And he know how to get it.
What's so funny is that Steve Nash in Phoenix was not that Steve Nash in Dallas.
No.
Like, and that was the funny part, because I guess the talent was, and this is where people need to understand, no matter how talented you are, you will never know until you're forced to use your talent. In Dallas, you had Dirk, Michael Finley, Antoine Jameson at one point, Antoine Walker.
Yep.
You had all these super studs with him where he was just a regular old guard. Just, you know, making great passes, hitting great shots. But when he got to Phoenix is where it's like, all right, I got my perfect squad. Mm-hmm. I got the squad that makes my talent. I got a dunker, 4 shooters.
Yep.
Now a whole nother Steve Nash appear. So he might have had all that with him the whole time, but he never got to use it because of the talent he had around him.
If that Phoenix team could go, I think that was the difference. That was a track squad.
It was a 4-out, 1-in type of style where he gets all the room to do whatever he wanted. Mm-hmm. In Dallas, it was pick and roll.
Dirt.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, dribble. Okay, Michael Finley on the post. Like, it was no room for him to sit here and, you know, and do all that. So when, you know, he got there and he just took off, it was like weird because it was like, where was this guy at? He was trash. And I don't want to say he was trash. He made an all-star, but it was like,
Yeah.
I wasn't scared of him then.
When he was in Phoenix, he was trying different things. I think he was the first person I seen that actually was just working on going off a right hand, right leg layups.
Yeah.
Like off balance layups. And I was like, what the hell he's doing? And then he get in the game, and he might get off balance. He's throwing it up. He's like, oh, okay, I see what he's doing. Or he might go through the lane and throw up a runner off the wrong leg. I mean, he worked on it. He was like the first person I saw work on that part of the game. And it literally changed the whole NBA, the scale of the NBA, because everybody started doing the Steve Nash dribble, going through the paint. Steve Nash dribble, like, you know, because he's searching. He's just searching. He's searching.
Probing.
So, like, at first, a lot of people couldn't guard that because they got to the paint. And everybody coming here, and next, you know, boom, ball going behind his back, dunk. And they, so it was the rule now. Steve Nash dribble. Steve Nash dribble means stay home. The big stay home. The guards go take your man because that's what he wants. Yep. But now you got to the wing. Now you got Steve Nash on the big. That's a bucket. So it was hard to guard him.
Okay. It was just one of those things. It was like you sit and see players you played with and just try to pick, like, because from the outside you see it, but you know when someone's inside, like, okay, how good was he really? You know, it's just one of those things. I was just wondering. All right.
Yeah, there's always more to it. But all right, you got to probably rest up a little bit. You got to
get ready
for your game. You both got a game, but you're up first. So
man, we winning ours though. You know, he really got a battle tonight, not us. We got to win.
It's always a battle.
Yeah.
But again, we're here in Miami. Again, this episode is brought to you by our friends at Keeps. You love Keeps.
Keeps the waves.